Final seconds now wind down. This ball game is over and the Wildcats win. Cats win it three in a row and their eighth win of the season. Not an easy victory by any stretch against these Boilermakers. And the Cats win it 21-14.
So a winner for the Wildcats. They get Purdue. Oh, those hapless Boilermakers. But still, you take that one and run with it if you are Northwestern 21-14, and you keep your hopes alive.
I was getting nervous, Connor. I was feeling the Boilermaker, the heat of the boiler, if you will. They were hanging around all day long, those Purdue Boilermakers, where Northwestern scores a touchdown about 3 minutes into the game. I'm thinking, this is going to be a rout.
Mm-hmm.
Next play, 68-yard bomb. Okay.
Yep.
Well, this is going to be a whole big thing, isn't it? But they survived, and hey, trying to become that first Northwestern team to win 11 games in the history of the program, still right in front of them. They do have a little bit of a challenge next week against your alma mater.
Two quarterbacks used this afternoon, so some interesting things there. We'll talk a little Wildcat 315. The athletic director, Dr. Jim Phillips, is going to join us for Wildcat Insider. Should let you know this before we go to news. Running a marathon, traveling to a foreign city, skydiving, visiting Goods Furniture in Kewaunee, Illinois. What do they have in common? They're all things you need to check off your bucket list. Don't wait any longer. Plan a trip to Goods Furniture in Kewaunee. It's a place you need to see to believe, Carm. From their humongous selection of furniture to the Bavarian-style wine cellar restaurant, from the market square shops to the glass elevators and skywalk connecting the multi-building campus, there's something at Goods for everyone. Make it a day of it. Make a day of it this fall. Goods is an easy, stress-free drive out west on I-80, and Goods is celebrating 120 years of the good life. It's time to find out firsthand what that means. Enjoy big city selection with small town prices. That's what makes Goods so unique. Everyday exceptional value. Travel to Goods and know you're going to add a quality piece of furniture to your home. It's open every day from 9 to 6. Goods Furniture, no hype, just honest-to-goodness value day in, day out.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Welcome in, 310 here on 720 WGN. This is The Beat. On after another Northwestern win. He's Mark Carman. I'm Connor McKnight. Your Northwestern Wildcats pulling out against the Purdue Boilermakers, 21-14. It's like we said just before Rob's news at 3 o'clock, those hapless Boilermakers. That's a rough situation to have your program in. Still, you have a team like that come in. Maybe it is a little bit of a trap game. You take care of business. You're on to another one at Wisconsin next weekend, and then you finish the schedule off with the in-state rival Illinois, and you got yourself a chance, Mark, like you said, a shot at an 11-win season if you take out a bowl game, too.
Well, just to give Purdue just a drop of credit for a second here, they did.
Oh, they played well today. Sure. Organizationally, not so much.
Right, and they've been down for a while. But they're talking about a three-point loss at Michigan State where they were right there with Sparty, and they beat Nebraska, who beat Sparty. So Purdue, sure, not a great team, and they got blown out by Illinois, who is not blowing out a lot of teams. But sometimes the Boilermaker can be competitive, and today was one of those days. And Northwestern, 116 yards, a touchdown for Justin Jackson, 8 wins. And, hey, you gotta feel good about the opportunity to go play at Wisconsin next week, which will not be easy, but a great opportunity nonetheless with a lot on the line.
You know, you're right. Purdue does have the tendency of putting up a handful of points against opponents that they, you know, might or may not be in the game with the rest of the way, or at least defensively. I thought there'd probably be three more touchdowns in this game, and it was interesting to see how Fitz and the Wildcats kind of navigated that offensively with Zach Oliver coming in and relief of Clayton Thorson and, you know, changing things up and then going back to Clayton Thorson too, who had a key 3rd-and-13 run to keep a drive alive as the Wildcats went in for a go-ahead score. Interesting little afternoon offensively. We've got Wildcat Insider coming up at 3:15. The athletic director, Dr. Jim Phillips, will join us shortly as we start the program. Also, or as we start that part of the program. Also, Travion Henry, who had an interception today, a pretty key one too, as Purdue was moving the ball a little bit.
And a lot of interesting stuff going on in Northwestern's campus. Of course, they have the brand new facility being open, $23 million, which is going to, you would think, significantly help the athletic department. But some protests yesterday on campus, kind of...
As there have been throughout the country, really.
Supporting what's going on at Missouri. And Jim was there, and he was very supportive of people expressing their opinions. So that'll be fun to have a little bit of that conversation, along with, of course, where's this Wildcat team going to play their bowl game at? Because there's a lot of scenarios out there, as there always are. But we can get into that. And Travion's a very – I've talked to Travion a bunch of times. He's a real interesting kid.
Cool.
And a great football player, too.
And a hoops guy, from what we understand. So maybe we'll just talk – I know you want to talk basketball.
I love guys who – live their lives shooting anything into garbage cans. That's how, you know, you go about
that's how he, so he came up, you know, playing hoops. Is right. that what you're telling me?
You know, you're sitting there, you're studying, you're bored, you crumple something
you're
up.
You're here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and we're throwing stuff into the garbage can, right. thinking we're shooting threes.
Right. That's Travion Henry. He, that's what he told me. Sure. Whenever I get a chance, I shoot something into something.
Cool.
It's great.
Like a regular Doug McDermott. A couple of finals throughout the Big Ten. Ohio State over Illinois. You heard some of these scores, but we figured we'd give them to you. Ohio State over Illinois, 20-3, rather. No big problems there. Michigan State over Maryland, 24-7. Although that ball game was close for the first half or so. Michigan State finally pulling away. You've got Nebraska and Rutgers kicking off right about now. Michigan is up 7-3 on Indiana. And, of course, your night game are the undefeated Iowa Hawkeyes. No, nothing from you?
Well, no, it's
nothing for your alma mater. The undefeated Iowa Hawkeyes.
Well, listen,
you got nothing.
We've got Minnesota coming into Iowa City tonight, trying to get to 10-0, number five in the country. And quite frankly, as Mike Jacobson, our outstanding producer and also Iowa alum, we both know, you just can't stop Iowa. You can only try to contain them. This is a powerhouse program, and Kirk Ferentz has always been on top of the world.
We will we'll get to the Wildcat Insider part of the program. I can do this. Part of the program coming up next. Dr. Jim Phillips, the athletic director for Northwestern, joins us in just a couple of minutes. We'll take a look at that program's win today. 312-981-7200. Plenty more to come here on the beat. We're here until 5:30. Preps Plus takes over. Then you got 720 WGN.
The Wildcats of Northwestern, Evanston, Illinois.
It's time for Wildcat Insider. On the home of Chicago's Big Ten team, 720 WGN.
Welcome back. I'm Connor McKnight. He is Mark Carmen. It is time for Wildcat Insider. They get themselves another W today, 21-14 over the Boilermakers. We're joined now by the good Dr. Jim Phillips, the athletic director at Northwestern. Afternoon, sir. It seems we are speaking yet again. I don't know if you know this, Dr. Jim, but you and I, when we talk like this, it's a pretty darn good record for Northwestern this season. And another one here with a chance for 11. Congrats on the win.
Appreciate it, Connor. Thanks. I'm proud of the guys. There's a lot of emotion whenever you say goodbye to 24 seniors, and lots of things flash through their minds about past experiences and being recruited. And for all of us, in the blink of an eye, you know, that 4 or 5 years goes by pretty quick. And it was really a terrific win for us. Purdue's had a couple people on the ropes this year. They lost at Michigan State by 3. They beat Nebraska pretty handily. They had a stinker last week against Illinois. So you just don't know. And I give Purdue a lot of credit. They played well, but our guys found a way to win.
Do you get emotional on a senior day, Dr. Jim? Because I haven't been a senior for a while now, but I find myself with a tear in the eye every single time. So I'm wondering if you feel the same way.
I do, Mark. The reality is you become really close to these young guys and young ladies when I talk about the other Northwestern teams. I mean, my wife and I live 3 blocks from the campus. We have all the student-athletes over to our house every year. So those seniors, if they're 50 years, they've been over, 5 or 6 times. And if they're true seniors, 4 or 5 times. So they know Laura and I. They know our 5 children. We know them. We know their families. We know their siblings. And it's far beyond just what people see, the 3-hour football game. You see them in academic services. You see them in the training room. You see them in the dining and nutrition areas. You go out to practice and see them. You get on the bus with them. You're in the locker room with them. So these are really close relationships that you build, and certainly the coaches are around them the most, but I think as administrators it's part of our responsibility to spend and nurture and guide and mentor all these guys. So I'm really, really happy for them, and I think that's why you pull so hard for them, and that's why these games are hard, just sitting on the sideline just watching, because you want them to win so badly, because you know how committed they've been and how hard they've worked.
I'm talking with Dr. Jim Phillips here, the athletic director at Northwestern. This is Wildcat Insider. It's part of the beat here on 720 WGN. You know, every handful of seasons you look up, or at least I feel this way being a college football fan, you look up and you see a guy who's on a club that you think has been there for the last decade and a half. You know, I know you only get 5 years of eligibility, but for whatever reason, you look up. And for me on this team, it's Dan Vitale, number 40, the fullback, 6'2", 235, local kid from Wheaton. And you saw him in the pregame, or I don't know if you saw this, but on the pregame, they captured him, a little a tear in his eye kind of thing, had the parents there and everything like that. I know that that guy means a lot to that team. He's taken a lot of hits. He's carried the ball for short yardage. He's punched things in around the goal line. He's that kind of, you know, workhorse kind of guy, the do everything H-back that you know that a Pat Fitzgerald team is going to have season in and season out. And it's really nice to see a guy like Dan have that, you know, senior day when he's been at Northwestern for what I think is probably about 24 years now. And it's just nice to see a guy like that get the send off that he wanted.
No, Connor, you've got it right. I mean, you know, you have crushes on these kids from the standpoint of they just have it all. They're smart, they're intelligent, they're hardworking. They do a great job in the classroom. They do a great job on the field. They're leaders, and that's a guy like Dan Vitale. And I think one of the cool things is his younger brother Tommy is a freshman on our team, and unfortunately, he suffered a knee injury about 4 games into the season. But I think that's a statement that Danny has really enjoyed his time at Northwestern. His parents, who are great people, have felt strongly about what Northwestern has meant to Danny in his life, that they felt so committed to send their younger son to play for Fitz and to be part of our program. But you're right. You see a guy like him, and it does seem like he's been with us forever. And that's why it is, to Mark's question, it's why it is you get a little sadness, because as we huddled around and after the game, we went out on the field to take a senior picture. It's going to be the last time they're going to wear the purple and white at Ryan Field in the rest of their career. They'll be in the locker room again for practice, but as far as competition venue, it's over for them. And there's some finality to all that.
Jim, let's talk about yesterday. You guys had the groundbreaking for the $260 million athletic facility, which is just a huge thing for Northwestern Athletics and the university. You also had about 100 kids standing in solidarity with the University of Missouri and Yale, and expressing themselves about, you know, how they want the campus to be better. And you know, I'm reading your quotes. You're extremely supportive of the students and the way you guys handled as far as giving people a voice. And I know Morton Shapiro has put out an email, and there's going to be a whole lot of conversation going on. So it's a real interesting time going on campuses, and you guys are very much involved, and I think it's awesome.
Connor and Mark, listen, you guys every day do something that I think at times we take for granted. And that is, you speak what you believe to be the truth. And yesterday was an example of a group of students that feel that their voice needs to be heard. On college campus, let's not be hypocritical. On college campuses, we talk about leadership and developing leaders. We talk about independent thinking and giving students an idea to think independently. We think about having a voice. Let's just not talk about that. Let's listen to them and let's give them those opportunities. What happened yesterday, I have absolutely no problem with. I just don't. I feel strongly when you have a voice and you want to be heard, that you have a chance to do that. And they came in and they had a chance to speak for about 20 minutes, and then they left, and it was peaceful. It was respectful. And I was really proud of the Northwestern community yesterday and how that all went down. And then we went on to the program, and the beauty at the end of all of it was that we did have a chance to put a shovel in the ground and start a $260 million athletic and recreation project that will be state-of-the-art on the shores of Lake Michigan.
It's what college is all about. It's about finding your voice, finding out exactly what you need to know about yourself, and Northwestern's a great place to do all of those things. And we appreciate you coming on, Dr. Jim, and talking about what it means to be there.
You got it. And again, you guys have a beautiful chance in your own format to view your thoughts. And it's about sports, but you also have a chance, as you do, talk about other things in life. And it's important. That's why this is the greatest country anywhere, because we afford people those opportunities. I don't want those ever to be taken for granted. And we should make sure that we're supportive of people when they want to exercise that voice.
No, and you're right, too. You know, I hate to get too philosophical about things, but you know, conversation has to be followed by action. Otherwise, it's as meaningless as anything else. I mean, that's what we need to learn.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people have to learn that at this point, you know?
No, you got it, Connor. Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. On a lighter note, before you go, Aaron Falzone, I'm already in love with him, Dr. Jim. The guy looked real solid in his first game as a Wildcat last night, and the Cats win over Lowell, which was a little bit too interesting for a bit there, but they got it done.
Yeah, and Aaron was highly recruited, top 75, some say top 50 player in the country. He'll have some ups and downs, but he can shoot the basketball and he can score. And I'm, you know, really saddened about what happened with Vic Law and his injury. So he's going to be out, and that's a really important piece for us this year. But as Chris said, they're not canceling the season, and we got a lot of good depth on this team, and so you move forward. But how about college basketball on opening night yesterday?
Oof.
Names and schools does not matter. You see what happened to Wisconsin yesterday. You see what happened to Illinois. You see what happened to NC State. You see what happened to UCLA, Arizona State, the list, Marquette. Those are all really pretty good programs, and all of them, you know, got beat. So I think what that says to me is the reminder from last year that there isn't a lot that separates teams in college basketball. And that's as level of a playing field that I've seen in a while. And I think you're going to continue to see that throughout the year. And the seasons are long, so, you know, the seasons aren't over because teams lose 2, 3, 4, 5 games. But I think it's just a reminder. That's the beauty of, I think, basketball in college athletics, that it doesn't matter how big your school is. It doesn't matter how big your budget is, how big your arena is. When you line up out there and it's 5 versus 5, anything can happen. And yesterday, as we started the season, was an example of that.
Jim, as always, appreciate the time. Looking forward to getting out to a ball game there. We'll get out to the hard court, sit down, have a soda pop or two, and figure out what's going to happen with that Chris Collins season.
That'd be great. And I also want you to make sure you clear some time during the holidays. And if we take care of business, you guys will need to bring your sunscreen, and let's go somewhere warm and have a great bowl experience. So
I have no problem with that.
Meeting us there.
No problem with that whatsoever. Get an Adirondack chair out there, sit back and catch some rays with the Wildcats. I have no problem doing that.
Get rid of the get rid of the hand checking rule. Too many fouls last night,
Dr.
Jim.
See, this guy.
Yeah, I agree.
Don't you agree? It's, I know you agree.
I agree.
Anybody who likes basketball agrees. Okay.
I agree.
We'll let you go. Thank you.
All right. But listen, I'm all over Jimmy DeCastro about making sure you guys come with us on the bowl game. So
awesome.
You make sure you mention that to him when you see him.
Sounds like a plan for us. We could use vacation a little bit. I know Mike Jacobson, our producer, needs sunlight like a plant at this point. So, Jim, thanks again. We'll check you again next week.
All right, guys. Thanks. Go
Cavs. You got it. Jim Phillips, the athletic director out at Northwestern. For those of you who take it like a Bears fan, Chicago Tribune Sports Plus is for you. Get award-winning sports-only coverage, insights, and perks at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus. Right back with more here on 720 WGN.
Second down and 10 from their own 27-yard line, and Blau to throw again. Quick throw through the hands of the intended receiver and intercepted by Travion Henry at the 40-yard line, and down he goes. Henry, the deflected pass and the interception, his second of the year, third of his career, and the Wildcats come up with the turnover, the first of the day, at the 41 of Purdue.
Welcome back to the beat here on 720 WGN. We are in the Wildcat Insider portion of our show. Wildcats successful again. They get a 21-14 win over the Boilermakers. Travion Henry joins us now on Wildcat Insider. You heard the call that Dave Ennett had here on the station. Travion in the right place at the right time, which I think in sports is a skill in and of itself. Guy picks it off, helps out his Wildcats. Congrats on the win, Travion, and thanks for being with us, my man.
I appreciate it. No problem at all. It was great to hear that call.
Right? I mean, I got to imagine, I kind of forget that you guys don't get a chance to hear, like, all the highlight material until, like, it's well after it's done. You know what I mean? So now you get to sit back
exactly,
and kind of...
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I pulled that off. I got that done. No big deal.
Any nerves on that sideline today when things got a little tight out there, Travion? What was the mood of the team as the game was a little bit tighter than maybe you guys were hoping?
It became a situation where we just had to dial it up a little bit better, focus on what we can control, and we needed to be where we needed to be at the right time and at the right place. So it was more of us just tuning it back in, like getting our lasers focused again, and And as you can see, I mean, we were able to get it done and come out with the victory.
So, Travion, X's and O's wise, answer this for me. I got a little bit of a football crush on your guy, Dean Lowry. I think he's one heck of a football player, and I know you guys do too. But it seemed like Purdue had, whether it was by putting seven guys on him throughout the entire day or not, they had some things bottled up in the defensive front. What's the conversation like with you guys in the defensive backfield as you realize that, you know, maybe things, you know, you're not getting the individual pressures up front that you might have gotten earlier? It seemed like Purdue had a little bit of time in the pocket that you might not have expected earlier, and coverages had to be changed a bit as the game went on.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, I wonder whose crush is bigger on Dean, yours or mine, but...
It's mine. It's mine's unsafe. Travion, mine's unsafe. It's...
Yeah, well, in our conversation, it's just more of all right, we're going to have to lock our receivers up a little bit more. I mean, we know our pass rushers, we have a great pass rush. Let's just lock them up and make sure we're covering our guys as long as we can.
Travion Henry Sr. played his last game at Ryan Field today for the Northwestern Wildcats. Of course, you guys have Wisconsin next week and then Soldier Field and then a big-time bowl game. You were on the field, sir, back in the Gator Bowl, which is the biggest win the Wildcats have ever had. You had one stop in that game, and now you have a opportunity to hopefully play again on New Year's Day. Is that starting to come into focus for you a little bit?
A little bit. We're starting to really realize where we may end up, and that conversation is a little bit on the back burner, but we have it in mind, and we're really just trying to focus on the next opportunity that we have coming, and we really just focus on going 1-0 week in and week out. So we know we have Wisconsin, Illinois, and we'll know all that'll work itself out, and it would be nice to play on the New Year's Bowl.
So, Travion, if you can, walk us through the emotions as, you know, the game gets started and, you know, you guys who have been there for 4 or 5 years, you know, get honored out there on Ryan Field, the Wildcat faithful there to greet you. I mean, that's, I got to imagine that's, it's a range of emotions for you.
It was very emotional for me. It's a lot of nerves, and usually I don't get the nerves that I felt today, but they definitely run it through me, and to see my family and to be able to walk out with them. I'm sure all the other seniors felt the same way. This game is very important to a lot of guys playing on their last senior day, their last game on Ryan Field. And I'm glad we got the victory. So, you know, we went out on Ryan Field the right way.
You had a brother, Travion, who played football at Yale, and, of course, you at Northwestern. And the recent weeks, you've had protests at Missouri, Yale, and then at NU yesterday at the groundbreaking. Were you involved at all yesterday? What's your reaction to everything that went on campus?
I heard a lot about it. I wasn't involved. I was actually watching a little film with some guys and just heard the news come in. But it's an opportunity for voices to be heard, and I'm sure the students wanted to take advantage of that, and I'm sure they were probably heard, and they want their voices and they want their opinions to be heard. So they took that opportunity too.
You know, Travion, we were talking to Athletic Director Dr. Jim Phillips a handful of minutes ago, and he couldn't have been more proud. Yeah, that's the right way to say it. Couldn't have been more proud of the protesters out there, that they were respectful of it, that they had the right voice out there. And mm-hmm. In the conversation with Dr. Jim a little while ago, we just kind of started thinking about college and what an incredible opportunity that was for us, how that opportunity probably needs to get to as many people as possible in this country. And I just, you're a senior and, you know, you're in your last lap. I just wonder, is there one thing that over the course of your time at Northwestern, whether it's on the field or in the classroom or interpersonally or whatever, I mean, is there one thing that sticks with you that you've learned more than, one thing that sticks with you more than anything else in your 4 years there?
I would have to say the one thing that really sticks with me is the fact that we can be around so many people from so many different backgrounds, have so many different faiths, come from different places. But when we step out on the football field, we're all one. We're all one unified unit. And when everybody trusts with each other, we can have seasons like the season that we're having now. That was one thing that we saw in the Gator Bowl season. We all trusted each other. We all became unified. And that unity can go a long way. We all just become one.
It's, you know what? I'll be honest with you. Maybe I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I think the way you say that, I think it's definitely real
And I think you understand, and I think a lot of us understand that that can be felt in a lot of places. And yeah, football's where you find a lot of it, but that can be felt in a lot of places.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, in various lines of work. I think the most successful lines of work have the ability to respect cultures, respect where people come from, and honor that, and understand that diversity is huge, and being able to respect each other is powerful. Very powerful.
It's been a theme for you guys all season long. I mean, it started in the summer. You guys had that scavenger hunt where I saw the entire Northwestern Wildcat football team on the L coming downtown. Never seen that much purple on one train. But you guys have been tight all season long. This has been building for a while now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It really started in the off season. I remember there was one morning in the winter. There may have been, I want to say, a foot or two of snow.
Ooh.
And we had to be at the stadium around 6 a.m. And it's a true testament to the investment that we had within each other, because everyone showed up on time. Everyone was on time. Everyone was there. And from then on, we understood that we had something special. And we wanted to really invest in each other and make this season special.
Well, Travion, keep building on it. Congrats on the win this week. Wisconsin next week.
You.
Illinois in the final one. And then hopefully we'll see you well, hopefully the next time we see you play football is in 2016, to be honest with you.
And just so you know, I have been talking to Coach Collins. I know you want to roll on the hoop team this year. It was terrible news on Vic Law, but maybe there's an opportunity for you to sneak in there and put a couple jump shots up.
Travion, just so you know, Carm is like stumping for you with Chris Collins. Like, there's meetings here in the back rooms where he's like, you got to get Travion on this ball club.
Keep on that pitch for me. I appreciate it.
I told him, Coach.
I need that.
I told him, Coach, he used to take Brandon Knight to the tin when he was in high school. This is a guy you should have on your squad.
Well, hopefully he sees an opportunity. I mean, I can at least come in and play some defense or something.
There you go. There you go. At least you're five fouls walking around. You know, I mean, you're five fouls. Everybody needs them. All right, Travion, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it. Congrats on the win, and hopefully we'll check back with you next week, all right?
All righty. Thank you so much. Go Cats.
You got it. Travion Henry, defensive back with the pick. Deflection kind of thing, but you got to be in the right place at the right time. Guy knows what's up.
I mean, think about the Henry parents. You raised one of your kids, they went to Yale and played football, and then the other one you raised, he went to Northwestern and played football.
Well done, Henrys.
I mean, with all due respect to the Carman family, that's a little bit of, you know, that's just, the Henrys are greater than the Carmans.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done okay for ourselves. I don't want to completely diminish my own family.
Of course not.
But that's big time right there.
Agreed. Northwestern gets themselves a win. It's 21-14 over Purdue. Step to a break real quick. We come back. We'll spin you around college football as well. 4 o'clock news, too. We'll get you updated on the latest from Paris as well throughout the course of the afternoon. You have the beat, 720 WGN.
First and goal, Ohio State of the Illinois 6. Snap to Barrett. Running it left side, Barrett. He gets to the 5. Barrett goes to the end zone for the touchdown. He took a big stick as he ran it to the left corner of the end zone, but JT Barrett takes it in from 5 yards out.
It's a Buckeye Radio Network. JT Barrett with a score against Illinois is the number, what is it? It's a 2, right? Number 2 Ohio State Buckeyes cruise to a win against Illinois this afternoon.
The Illini were competitive for 5 seconds, and yes, number 2, Connor. But that that didn't last very long.
So I'm flipping back and forth between the early on in the morning, the Northwestern game, and then the Illinois Ohio State game. And are the Buckeyes 3? Did they come out 3 in that? Oh, that's right. It was Alabama 2, and then Clemson 1. Oh, that's right. Okay. So anyway, I'm flipping back and forth, and
they're 2 in the AP top 25. But go ahead, never mind the rankings. Yes, they're 3.
I flipped back just after the first touchdown by Ohio State. So they go up 7-0. It's about 3:40 left to play in the first quarter. And I can't remember who the broadcast team was, and most of that just washes over me anyway. So, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, it's a cheerleader-type broadcast. It's that kind of thing. Which, fine. But I couldn't help but notice the fact that they were praising JT Barrett for being the guy that puts this offense together and really gets that boy, and that's a reason, you know, they score the touchdown. Boy, that's a reason you got JT Barrett in there, is because he really sparked that offense. And I couldn't help but think, okay, and this is endemic of Ohio State in and of itself. You've been struggling to find offense all season long. Really? You got 3:40 left to play in the first, and you're just now scoring against Illinois? And that's your, and this is, and the broadcast goes to, boy, look at that kid go. I mean, what are we, Listen, college football is in this weird spot this season, right? I mean, it just is. You've got people questioning whether Alabama should be ranked as high as they're ranked. Not should be ranked, but should be ranked as high as they are. You pair them, you know, you look at Alabama or even Clemson and pair them against the rest of a top five. You've got questions back and forth. There are real questions about, and I don't mean to pick on your Iowa Hawkeyes or anything.
Go ahead.
But there are real questions as to whether or not they could even touch the end zone against some of these defenses that are summarily or concurrently ranked in the top five. I don't know that there's a great team in college football right now.
Well, that's my take on it. I don't see any real powerhouse. And that, of course, is the conversation. It always is right now. Can the Big Ten hang with the SEC? And then some years they prove to be, actually, yeah, they can extremely well. And then other years they get their heads kicked in.
Sure.
So what year is this going to be? I really don't know the answer to that.
That's a fair point.
Do I think that Iowa is a number five team in the country? No, I don't. But they run the ball well. Their defense is solid, and they're winning games. I mean, you can't argue with undefeated. Now the Big Ten's down, right?
And yet there are so many who would love to try. You know, and there's so many who would love to look at Clemson undefeated or whatever. And go, not that good a football team.
Right. I didn't think that Michigan was going to be as quickly all formidable. Like, I mean, this is
not after those first two games.
Right. You lose to Utah. You're like, okay, well, that's going to take
a while.
And then
Utah proved to be a little bit better team throughout before they got themselves shellacked, no doubt about it.
And people might dog Northwestern, you know, 8-2, are they really, they'll get killed on a New Year's Day. But, well, look, Stanford's lost one time. They lost to Northwestern.
And granted, Stanford has looked like a completely different club than the one that lost week one to Northwestern. But it's still the same guys. You know, and they clearly have figured a couple of things out, and that Pac-12 it's a pretty decent conference. Not great, but it's pretty good. It's a great win for Northwestern regardless. I mean, they were tasked with, you know, a whole offseason to figure out what the Wildcats were going to do and couldn't do it.
Without question. And listen, at this point in the year, I just start looking at the bowls and what's going to happen. You've got your six New Year's Day bowls. How many Big Ten teams are going to go?
Ah, yes, the Mark Carmen vacation plan setting. That's what we're doing here.
Well, you have Michigan State losing to Nebraska, and then you think that's like...
Which, just, I won't mention the Michigan State fan that I know, that everybody you know, that knew they were going to lose to that Nebraska team.
That I know and you know.
Let's focus on the fact that a lot of Michigan State fans knew they were going to lose that game to Nebraska. Just because.
I didn't.
Neither did I. I thought that was going to be, it should have been a walk. Should have been an absolute walk.
But it's not, that was a bad loss for the Northwesterns of the world because you're taking Michigan State down a peg. They're going to be.
No doubt about it.
And it's going to knock yourself. It probably knocks Northwestern. Even if they win out, I would think they're probably still knocked out. I mean, New Year's Day bowl. Now, that depends on how everything plays with everybody in front of them.
Right.
There's a lot of, you know, Michigan State and Michigan, and I'll throw everybody else in there. I mean, Oklahoma State and LSU and Utah and even Florida State, Mississippi State, TCU, which, holy smokes, Kansas almost got them today. That would have been unbelievable.
Kansas, one of the worst programs in the country for years now, actually put up a fight against TCU.
In the history of programs, Kansas football is
awful.
Yes.
I mean, what'd you have, an Orange Bowl in 2007, was that, against Virginia Tech?
That did happen for the Jayhawks.
And then the rest, I was at that ball game, actually. It snowed in Miami for the first time in 50 years.
That was Connor McKnight's first radio gig.
I was there. No, that was an online college football coverage station thing.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Your first.
And then 08 happened and everyone's money went away. A couple other finals around, well, not final, I guess, but Northwestern, Notre Dame taken to Wake Forest, 21-0. You've got Iowa State leading Oklahoma State 24-7. Okie State, the Cowboys, they're one of the undefeated teams in the college football, 9-0, but they trail 24-7 with about 2.5 to play in the second quarter there.
And they're 8 in the country right now.
They are.
So how far would that loss drop them?
Quite a bit.
You would think quite a bit.
Quite a bit. Northwestern Wildcats, take notice, because that might help you a notch or two. Florida over South Carolina, 24-14 there. You mentioned the Michigan State game. We did, right? They beat Maryland 24-7. So you got that one going on. That's a quick trip through college football. Florida State doing well. Everett Golson is, I believe, back in. No, he's not. Sean McGuire is playing for Florida State at quarterback. They lead NC State 34-17. That's been an interesting season down there in Tuscaloosa, or rather at Florida State. I'm looking at the Alabama score too. They lead Mississippi State 14-0. That's where that school is located.
And actually, one out of the SEC that I find interesting: Georgia 20, Auburn 13. Now, either one, they're not ranked or anything, but Auburn's at 5-5 now.
Right.
I mean, how hot is his seat right now? a Gus Malzahn. How hot is it?
The best thing that came from that game is that one of the Georgia coaches, I'm not sure which assistant, he was jumping up and down on the sidelines, and he wanted to like slap one of the players.
They were celebrating a play?
Yeah, celebration, jubilation. He goes to slap the guy in the helmet. He ends up poking him in the eye. I think the guy drops to the ground. And
oh, God.
Georgia number 36 is having a rough day. That, to me, was the highlight of my college football day in the SEC. Thank you very much. Mm. Go Bulldogs.
Yeah, Auburn could have a hot seat. You're right. Auburn could have a hot seat. And really, how can Mark Richt hold on at Georgia? I mean, he can, but you look at the losses that team is. I mean, they lost to Alabama. You lost to Tennessee. You lost to Florida. If you wanted to make a run, Georgia, those were your ball games to do it. 312-981-7200, the 4 o'clock news coming up in just a couple of minutes. Rob Martire will have the latest from Paris. This is The Beat, 720 WGN. Welcome back to The Beat here on 720 WGN. I'm Connor McKnight. He's Mark Carmen. 312-981-7200. We're a sports show most days of the week, most weekends, Saturdays and Sundays. But on a day like this, it's tough to pretend that sports really have all that much of, I don't know if relevance is the right word, Mark, but all that much import in our lives. I mean, the horrific events in Paris going on yesterday, obviously it's tough to, at least for a lot of people, you know, keep going about things. And I think, you know, I look through Twitter, I look through what's been going on with people that I know who have, you know, friends in Paris, friends in France. And I know I'm not the only person who's even close to, you know, being remotely connected to what's going on in that country. I know there are others who are, you know, far more connected to it and far more touched by the events in a very personal, very, very tragic way. I figured we just, you know, mention it a couple of times because it affects everything and it affects everyone. Events like Rob was talking about in sports, the NFL and the NBA tightened up their security last night and they will again tomorrow. I know college football stadiums around the country did the same. I just feel like it's worth mentioning this for those of you who feel so inclined and or are touched by it. The French consulate here in town was closed today, but a lot of French travelers, people who are from France, in Paris perhaps, stopped by the consulate today, put roses at the foot of the desk there. And from what it sounds like, and Rob, feel free to chime in here. I believe I have this right. A Pray for Paris vigil will take place at the Consulate General of France. That's 205 North Michigan Avenue. If you're so inclined and or downtown and want to be a part of that, the Tribune is throwing some information out there about it. It's a Pray for Paris vigil taking place at the Consulate General of France, 205 North Michigan Avenue. That's at 5 o'clock today.
Yeah, the diabolical brilliance of what these people do to Western society is strike at the very heart of how we define ourselves, and that's an open and free society. And it paralyzes us momentarily, but then we go back to our business, our day-to-day lives, and then we go back into forgetting, not forgetting, but we go back and we push these types of events down.
Yeah.
And that's why we end up where we end up, and it's just a tragic state of affairs right now.
I think it's important to mention, too, this is a radical group. They represent nothing but themselves. This is not something where any religion or any certain people should be under attack. This is a group unto itself that is a terrorist organization, and that I think that should be very clear. And to me, like, you just see some of the stories coming out last night because, you know, you hear about it and we're so numb to it. But, you know, I'm reading one right now. London native Nick Alexander, he was at the theater last night. He was selling merchandise for the Eagles of Death Metal, that was the band that was playing. This guy's 36 years old. He's selling merchandise for the concert, right? 36-year-old guy, and one of his friends has started a GoFundMe campaign for his memorial fund. I mean, just imagine that. You're 36 years old. You're selling merchandise at a concert, and that's it. Thanks for playing. I mean, it's unbelievable the world that we live in right now, and I obviously don't have any solutions over here. I far from it. But I do think it's important just to have the conversation and try to move it forward as to, you know, what are the things that we can do and how can we whatever way we can make the world a safer place, because Lord knows it's going to start. It just if it hasn't already hit super close to home, it probably will eventually. That's the terrible reality of the world that we're living in right now.
Well, I think what frustrates me, guys, is that we, because of our geographical location on the globe, we tend to compartmentalize things in the here versus the there. The problem with an attack like that is that it has hit here. A 23-year-old, beautiful Cal State student died. She was in Paris studying design, and she died due to these attacks. It hit home. Another woman, critically injured. She's having surgery on her leg, probably as we speak, injured in these attacks. So it happened there, but it hits home as well.
Couldn't have said it better, Rob. We're going to head out to Tom Rivers, ABC News. He's live in Paris in just a couple of moments. We'll keep you posted on exactly what's going on in the heart of France with the terrorist attacks yesterday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You have the beat here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, 720 WGN. I'm Connor McKnight. He's Mark Carman. We head up to the phones right now and talk with ABC News' Tom Rivers, who is live and in Paris and been covering this for the entirety of the situation going on there, tragic attacks. Tom, I wonder if you can appreciate you coming on. I wonder if you can update us on the latest with the law enforcement's efforts to catch up with and apprehend those responsible for the attacks last night in Paris.
Yeah, we see scattered police efforts around town, and we saw this back in January as well. Sometimes it's false leads. They were at a hotel by the Elysee Palace by the Eiffel Tower, actually. And, you know, it turned out to be a false alarm. And we're going to have a number of those. We also are getting the people up in Brussels, the authorities there involved, a possible connection with maybe some individuals. Maybe some weapons may have come down from Brussels. We're not sure, but they're checking that out. A couple days ago as well, there was an arrest of an individual, 51 years old, on the German border. And he was transporting all manner of weapons in his vehicle. May be connected, may not. But they're going over everything, and we'll see exactly where this all lies in the coming days. But still, it just shows you that this city is on edge.
Tom, as far as the stadium attack yesterday, which was thwarted, and then the bomber detonated, what additional, if any, information on that can you relay?
Yeah, well, we found out that one of the individuals with one of these belts, explosive belts, tried to get into the stadium proper, and security, for whatever reason, did not allow that to happen. Can you imagine if this individual detonated that belt in the middle of a crowd at any modern stadium you can think of? It's just unfathomable. So that's the kind of thing we're looking at here, and it's hard for people really to get their heads around it. You know, tonight people at a number of locations lighting candles, saying prayers. And still not really taking it on board, trying to understand how these people can do that to their fellow human being.
You know, talking with Tom Rivers, ABC News, joining us from Paris. I wonder, Tom, you know, with the French President Hollande there at the stadium, do we get a sense that, I mean, obviously the loss of life is horrific as it is, but obviously someone did their job there in getting that man away from as many people as he was seemingly looking at killing. Do we get a sense, or have authorities talked about Hollande himself being a target in these attacks?
Well, I'll tell you, this is such a complex. It's, you know, if it was one location, you could, you know, marshal all your resources and deal with it. But can you imagine some of the communications traffic that would go from left to right, up, down, over, all over the place? Very, very confusing. And then this can't be, you know, done overnight. This would take months and months and months of planning, preparation, reconnaissance work, you name it. And the worry is, just, you know, who's to say that, you know, this is just the second of more waves that eventually will be showing up here and elsewhere. Watch your space, as they say.
Tom, I'm just curious how long you've been based in Paris and how much you've seen the city change, because, you know, you've got attacks on a kosher deli, you've got Charlie Hebdo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I guess, was there a sense that this was coming, and how long have you been there?
I've been coming back and forth for about 30 years based in London. But, the really changed dramatically in January with the Charlie Hebdo attacks. And these attacks were very, very close to where those offices were, although Charlie Hebdo has moved now. But the people, it's amazing. People are not, inward looking. You go on the streets, right? If I go on the streets right now, people are open and friendly. It's almost that they cannot really fathom what's going on and understand it fully. And, life does go on, but boy, oh boy, it's a bitter pill to take. That's for sure.
I can't imagine how long it might take for everyone to kind of come to grips with what's happened. And then I suppose move on into what is really a new reality there in Paris.
Yeah, and what's the deal? And if you say no, I'm not going to ever leave my doorstep. I'm not going to trust anyone anymore.
Yeah.
Well, in a sense, then the bad guys have won. Why? Because it's curtailed the way you live your life.
Yeah, Tom, appreciate you calling in and appreciate the work you've been doing over there in Paris. Stay safe. We'll be looking forward to talking with you again.
Take care.
All right, Tom Rivers, ABC News, live in Paris.
So my brother, it's a small part of the story, but he was flying to Paris yesterday afternoon. I mean,
really?
He's at the airport. And I'm texting, he's at the airport. He's not the most technologically advanced individual on the planet. So I'm texting him as this is going on. I'm like, I don't know if you're, I don't mean to rain on the parade here. You're excited to trip to Paris. He's going with this whole group and whatnot. There's, terrorist attack seemingly going on, mm-hmm. right from the beginning of it. It wasn't completely clear, although pretty much knew.
The earmarks are there.
Right. Yeah. So, it went from, they were never not going, even when they, shut the country down. They were either going to be landing in Paris or landing in Brussels. And
right.
they're there now. I mean, they're
in Paris. They landed.
Oh yeah, they're there. They're doing, so as far as like moving on and going, I mean, these, people are traveling there. My brother's one of them. He's there now with a group of 30 Americans having a whole pilgrimage to Paris for the next, I think they're there for 10 days. So it's, you got to move forward. But there's got to, at some point here, I don't know, Connor, what your solution or your ideas are on it. But at some point, you would think that we could move past or advance it to a point where we're not complete. These stories are not just the same after the same after the same. It's just the new reality.
Well, unfortunately, these types of attacks are seemingly, at least for the attackers, a successful thing. I mean, they view this as a success, and it's terrifying to think of it that way. I can only hope, looking at this situation over the last not even 24 hours or almost 24 hours now, the tenor of things have changed completely. I mean, talking with Tom, you can obviously tell that the city itself hasn't quite woken up to exactly what happened to it. Some people absolutely have those people who have had their lives touched very, very intimately by this tragedy, by what's the horrific happenings. I wonder this though, the international community has woken up to it. And I think the support of a really a world or most of it anyway, has been thrown behind the city of Paris and the country of France. I can only hope that the border closings were effective in keeping those responsible, apprehendable there in that town and in that country. I think when you have a situation like this that even touches the stranger end of the spectrum, and you have a guy in Vladimir Putin pledging to work with and try and help root out ISIS, that's an interesting thing in and of itself. Now, obviously, the world will find the motives attached to this. And there will be claims, whether they're founded in something, claims, reprehensible for this, or responsible, rather, for these attacks by a lot of different factions here. But I think a lot of people can understand what and how these attacks were meant to affect us and how they were carried out.
Yeah, and listen, you go on with your life, right? I mean, it could happen in Paris, it could happen in Chicago, it could happen in New York, it could happen anywhere. So you're not going to, nobody's going to stop doing what they're doing. But there's also when you go and you travel, right, you go to the airport, a lot of people get super upset, oh, I got to take my shoes off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, you do. Sorry,
yeah.
I know you're a little bit inconvenienced, but that's the way of the world now. And if you can't get to the airport 20 minutes, in advance and you're going to miss your flight, well, then that's just too bad. Because I want there to be security. I don't know what happens as far as, stadiums go on. Maybe it takes longer to get in. You can't be against that type of stuff the way the world is right now, at least from my perspective.
But is security being positioned in the appropriate places? That Russian plane was brought down because of a bag that was put on the plane. Yeah. I'd like to know if the assets and the resources that we have are being used wisely. Sometimes I don't think so.
Well, maybe so. Maybe some. Maybe we just go on as it is, and just this is a part of the cost of doing business. But you know, it's a pretty scary concept right there too. I mean, right? I don't listen. If it takes longer for my bag to get on the plane,
well, I think it's about more than that at this point. You know,
of course.
I think we've realized now that you know you can have security check you at the gate or wherever it is. You saw how these attacks literally began, how the timeline began. It was a guy being turned away by security outside the Stade de France and then beginning that detonation. I mean, unfortunately, we live in a situation where one can do harm to hundreds more easily than ever before. And that's what causes this type of terror. Those are the instruments that cause this type of terror. The ideology behind it is a different thing completely and something else that has to be dealt with too.
And how, and that seems an impossible mountain to climb.
Right, and that's why I think very clearly, or more clearly than ever now, or even more clearly day after day, is it takes a concerted effort by those willing to do it. You know, it's not just one, it's all of us that has to do it. The High-Flying Hawks battle the Blues in a divisional showdown, Blackhawks and Blues. That's tonight at 6:30 on WGN TV Sports. Rob will have more in the 4:30 news here coming up. We'll also talk to Adam Hoge, Bears game coming up as well. We'll recap a little bit of the Northwestern win, too. You get 720 WGN. Welcome back. 437 here on the Beat 720 WGN. We are joined right now by our guy, Adam Hoge, a member of the Beat, who is does the Northwestern sidelines. He's also our Bears beat reporter here on WGN. Hey, Adam.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Not much. Figured we'd check in with you about the Bears and Rams coming up this weekend. Obviously, we'll get you keys to the game, and we'll get you all set up. And you know, Mark obviously has our pre-post with Hamp and OB and Kaz and that whole thing. But you know, you were out there all week, and injuries have been quite a key. I wonder if you can give people the latest on what's been going on with Alshon Jeffrey. You think he's going to be up or down for this ball game? And Pernell McPhee as well. It's been kind of a long, strange trip with his knee injury.
Yeah, let's start with Pernell because he's so important to the defense. This is something he's been monitoring for a few weeks now, and he has missed a practice here and there as they kind of just rest him. Now, this week he missed the entire week of practice, which is different. And also, he was pulled out of that game late. He kind of took himself out of the game. He kind of felt like that he wasn't effective enough late in that game. So it's obvious that the knee was bothering him late on Monday night against the Chargers in San Diego. He took the week off with the idea that hopefully he'll be ready to go. And my guess is he will be active in playing. The question is, how effective will he be? As for Alshon Jeffrey, I certainly understand the panic when on Thursday he pops up on the injury report and did not practice because of a groin injury. I don't get the sense, though, that this is as serious as the calf injury that cost him the entire preseason and the hamstring that cost him 4 regular season games. It's my understanding that he was actually able to complete practice on Wednesday, and it's sort of something that popped up afterward in practice. And one thing that the coaches have been doing this week on a short week is being cautious with guys. They did not practice as hard. Wednesday's practice in particular was noticeably shorter. So they're taking it a little bit easy this week, trying to make sure everyone's healthy. So I think a lot of this is precautionary. And if I had to guess, I have a gut feeling right now that Alshon Jeffrey will play.
Adam Hoge with us here. It's the Beat 720 WGN. You should read Adam Hogue's Bears blog at WGNradio.com. You gave credit to Jeremy Langford in your midseason awards here, the Offensive Rookie of the Year. I'm just curious, you know, some of the comments from Matt Forte this week about not wanting to come back too soon for health, but also his future. What was your take on Forte maybe not playing when perhaps he could, because, you know, he is a free agent. I mean, this is the reality.
Well, and he's got I understand it. I mean, he wanted an extension this offseason, and the new regime wasn't really ready to give it to him yet, right? So he needs to make sure that he's good. I mean, in terms of long term, not just this week. And also, if you're the Bears, though, I don't think you're all that upset about it. I mean, they want to evaluate Jeremy Langford, and they'd also like to make sure that Matt Forte is 100% healthy. So if this was a different situation, a different year, if the Bears didn't have a rookie like Jeremy Langford, and I should also throw in Kadeem Carey in the mix as well, because I thought he showed some promise.
He played well Monday.
In that game on Monday, too, and I think they want to see more of both of those guys. So I think it makes sense, really, for both sides not to rush it in this situation. That's not to take anything away from Matt Forte, though, because he has been outstanding this year when he's been on the field.
Kind of a weird season in that it's you're juxtaposing, like you talked about, evaluating some of the younger guys, and yet, you know, you're writing on WGN.com, you know, your Bears blog there, WGNradio.com/sports, by the way. Go check it out. About the opportunity for the Bears to have something like a 5-3 second half. You know, I mean, the schedule plays out, could be tough games, but it's definitely possible. Jonathan Anderson's been an interesting guy, you know, linebacker out of TCU. Who is this guy, and why is he playing so well, and why is John Fox and Vic Fangio, why are John Fox and Vic Fangio able to find in him something that apparently others couldn't?
Yeah, I don't really know where he came from, because I don't remember him being any kind of a big deal coming out of school last year.
And you and I watched those TCU linebackers for a while, you know? I mean, I feel like we would have noticed.
Yeah, no, so they obviously found a sleeping gem here. But let's keep in mind, too, that, you know, sometimes, remember Daryl Sharpton last year?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he had that big game in Atlanta, I want to say, and then that quickly faded. So you got to be a little bit cautious. But what you can't take anything away from what Jonathan Anderson has done. Now, if you look at that game Monday, you know, there were some mistakes, too, I think, in coverage. I think both of those inside linebackers, along Jonathan Anderson and Christian Jones, were a little bit vulnerable in coverage. But I think both made nice plays, too, in the running game. So for an undrafted rookie, he has exceeded expectations. And, you know, I asked him the other day in the locker room, come on, you're coming out of school this year, you're undrafted. Did you ever think you'd be handling the defensive signals on the field for the Chicago Bears by midseason? And, you know, the easy answer there for him was no. Obviously, he did not expect that to happen so quickly. But, you know, I think getting Shea McClellan back, assuming he does come back tomorrow, which I think he will, that's a boost for the defense, both in terms of communication, because there were some issues. You know, I saw one specific play on defense where Jonathan Anderson was trying to move Bruce Gaston, the defensive lineman, over a whole gap right as the ball was being snapped. So there were still some communications issues out there as well.
Adam, big step up in class tomorrow with the Rams and on the road. If they do win tomorrow, what happened?
Ooh, good question. Well, the defense continued to play well. Obviously, the Rams have some issue in the passing game, but they're pretty good in the running game, and Todd Gurley is looking like a beast. I mean, he's looking like he's everything he was billed to be coming out of Georgia last year. So they would have stopped him, and then offensively, they would have had to solve a pretty darn good defensive front that the Rams have. That probably means that Jeremy Langford had some success, and Jay Cutler continued to play as well as he has, and it also means that Alshon Jeffrey played and played well.
Yeah.
I'm not that optimistic about this game tomorrow, guys. A lot would have to go right. Everything I just listed, for all that to go right against this Rams team, I just don't necessarily see it happening. But I do think the Bears will be in the game. They've been in the last five games, and I think that's going to be something that continues to happen the rest of the season.
Adam, great job. Go Northwestern. I know they're playing your alma mater next week. You are a member of the Northwestern broadcast team. If you're not wearing purple next week, which I know you will be, but like in your heart.
He's going to be wearing red underpants.
Purple in my heart?
No. Purple in your heart, pal. That's what we're looking for you next week.
Well, aren't our hearts red to begin with, though?
Like, that's what I'm told.
Everyone's heart red, or is that a myth? Or is it actually purple? I don't know. We might have to solve that this week.
Don't get it caught into the whole semantics and reality of the world. Thank you.
Semantics and reality.
None of that
in either
sense
of those things, Adam.
I love you.
On the spectrum. See you, Adam.
All right, love you guys.
Absolutely. Adam Hoge, our guy, our Bears coverage man, and the Northwestern Wildcats sideline guy here on the broadcast with Dave Ennett. The Midwestern University Eye Institute in Downers Grove is now accepting patients as a full-service clinic. The Eye Institute provides comprehensive exams, glasses, and contact lenses, eye disease screening and treatment, vision therapy, low vision rehabilitation services, and emergency eye care. all at an affordable price. Learn more at MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500. That's MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Multispecialty Clinic, your family's home for healthcare. We'll get your fantasy lineup set with Vicente Fernandez of SportsManias.com. Next, you have 720 WGN. Welcome back to The Beat here on 720 WGN. You know what time it is. Every week we do it. We get your fantasy lineups set with our guy Vicente Fernandez of SportsManias.com. Check out the SportsManias app as well. They have their new emoji keyboard there. And I have checked. I have double-checked my homework, Vicente, because that's what we talked about. The smoking Jay Cutler emoji is there. I love it. And I was sending it around to everybody after Jay Cutler had the fourth quarter comeback against Phillip Rivers. I loved it. It was great. I love throwing it around. Thanks for doing that for us.
I'm glad to hear it. I mean, there's no better emoji to send to celebrate a Bears win than a Jay Cutler emoji.
No, it's wonderful. And really, watching the whole thing in the fourth quarter was pretty good for Bears fans, too. I might need an Entrell roll emoji at some point, just an old dude maybe in a walker stunningly making a tackle on Danny Woodhead in the middle of the field to save a game. But I know that's a lot of work for you guys.
I love it. I'm a big Miami Hurricanes fan, so Entrell roll has a special place in my heart as a fan of that team. So we might have to roll it out.
All right. You know, put it down there. Put a trademark made by The Beat here on 720 WGN. I'm sure that'll be really easy to fit in. Vicente, you know where I like to start the fantasy conversation every week. I love starting with the quarterbacks, and I think for a lot of people, when you talk about top tier offenses, it starts affecting everybody's rosters because those are the top guys you draft. You know, and you get an offense like the Patriots are humming right now, or maybe like the Saints have been going for the last handful of years. Even their wide receiver three could be a one or a two, depending on how deep how deep your league is on your roster. So when you look at the Green Bay Packers and you take a look at what that offense has struggled to do, at least at the start of games and the start of halves, does that worry you, or is it more about them coming back and just fantasy wise putting up the points regardless of how they get there eventually at the end of a ball game?
Yeah, no, with an offense like the Packers, I'm not particularly worried in terms of the flow of the game. You've got certain players, you know, like Aaron Rodgers, who just consistently put up points. Obviously, you're checking that box score early on, and there is cause for concern right away. But at the end of most weeks, it ends up working out. The guy in Green Bay that's been concerning is really Eddie Lacy.
Yeah.
And he got off to a slow start last year and the year before that. So he's been known to come back strong late in fantasy seasons and really, you know, turn things around for his owners come playoff time. But this year with James Starks clearly outperforming him, it's a difficult sell on him. So he's a guy in Green Bay that worries me the most.
Yeah, so Starks gets the nod as the number one running back. I mean, I would imagine he's already been added in a bunch of leagues, but can you look to trade high with a guy like Starks at this point, or is it hold on and grasp with what you got?
I don't think I'd go hard after somebody like Starks, just because, you know, there is that threat that Lacy comes back late in the season and reemerges, maybe not as the number one back, but at least just split carries and steal some of those goal line touches. So he's somebody, if you picked him up, that's a fantastic waiver wire pickup this season, and it's obviously working out. But if you don't have him, I wouldn't be overextending to try to trade him onto your team.
There's been a lot of hand-wringing about Cam Newton and whether or not he's worthy of the MVP. I mean, for every touchdown he throws, there's, you know, people who want to point out that he's overthrown a couple of wide-open guys as well. You know, you might not love his receiving core, but they get things done. Greg Olsen has been a top-tier tight end, you know, since he's been put together with Cam, at least I think so, at least fantasy-wise. Is Cam Newton a guy that you just kind of slough off the rest of the X's and O's and just worry about the fantasy numbers, or are there concerns there for you on a roster?
No, in terms of Cam Newton owners, I'd be riding that wave, absolutely. I mean, he's somebody who, you know, sure, if you're actually watching, you know, his performance, there are plays that can be a bit unorthodox and even ugly, but at the end of the day, you know, he's been scoring 18-plus fantasy points, in pretty much the entire season except for three starts, I believe. So he's been fairly consistent across the board. He's also somebody, you know, who can get it done running the ball as well, which is obviously a huge value add to a quarterback in fantasy.
Have you ever seen anything like we've seen in the last, you know, couple of weeks here in Pittsburgh? I mean, you got a guy, Le'Veon Smith, Le'Veon Bell, who might just be, you know, your number one running back drafted overall in your league. And then he goes down, and then the guy that comes in, D'Angelo Williams, might just be the number one running back coming in once he gets the start. I mean, it's crazy how productive that dude was last week and how productive he, you know, looks to be the rest of the season.
It is absolutely scary, and I am definitely kicking myself as someone who had taken him as a handcuff and had a bad bye week where I let him go. I figured Le'Veon Bell would stay healthy. Somebody snatched him up, being smart. So it's incredible. It's really incredible to see what D'Angelo Williams is doing. And he's somebody who should have a big week this week against the Browns as well. The Browns are giving up on average over 23 fantasy points to opposing running backs. And as you said, D'Angelo Williams, in the weeks that he's been playing, has been the number one running back in fantasy sports.
So there's a lot up in the air, closer to home, there's a lot up in the air with the Matt Forte situation here at home. Practicing a little bit this week. John Fox is what John Fox always is. He just doesn't say a damn thing. But how impressed were you with Jeremy Langford Monday night against the Chargers? And, you know, if you're in a deep-ish league or maybe you're in some kind of keeper thing, or, you know, for those of you who aren't in New York and for whom daily fantasy wasn't deemed illegal by the attorney governor just the other day, is Langford a guy who you can pick up on the low end of a salary cap and plug in if things break his way come game time, or, you know, an hour and a half before game time here tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like having Langford on a roster. You know, last week, obviously, he put up combined 140 yards between receiving and rushing, you know, sort of similar numbers to what we've seen with Matt Forte. But as we just spoke about with D'Angelo Williams, the threat of injury to a number one back and having a number two that can come in and pretty much not obviously be the same back, but produce similar numbers, that's what wins you leagues. So I really like Jeremy Langford as an add, you know, just in case injuries linger with Matt Forte and Langford keeps playing.
So let's take a look at the wide receivers real quick here before we let you go. I'm looking around. Alshon Jeffrey is what he's been. You know, you saw Antonio Brown put up, I think it was, you know, I checked my Sports Mania's alerts, and it said that Antonio Brown had 1,455 yards and 7 touchdowns last week, which I love the app and everything, but I thought it was wrong when I read it. I mean, my God, the guy was fantastic. But one of the guys that's been jumping up the rankings here, Allen Robinson, wide receiver out of Jacksonville. I don't love the quarterback situation. Well, nobody loves the quarterback situation there, but he's put up numbers. How much trust can you have in Allen Robinson right now?
I like Allen Robinson this week. I mean, he's faced two tough matchups the last 2 weeks, and he's put up a combined 27 points. This week, you know, he's facing off against the Ravens, who are giving up an average of 31-plus fantasy points to opposing wideouts. So I like Robinson this week. And, you know, in general, he's had a good year. He had a good year last year. So he's somebody that I think at this point can be relied on.
All right, here's how we end it. You know how we do this every week. If there's a guy out there who, you know, Robinson, obviously, you know, kind of a top-end kind of guy, at least coming into this week. For those of you playing daily, for those looking for a waiver pickup to save your season, get yourself back into the playoff picture, is there one guy, quarterback, wideout, tight end even, you know, anybody on the spectrum here that you think is a buy-low, you know, diamond-in-the-rough kind of matchup this week here in Week 10?
So I'm actually going to go with, you know, with the quarterback that isn't getting a lot of love, and he's Allen Robinson's quarterback, Blake Bortles.
Really?
Because the Ravens, really, yeah. And surprisingly, I know. But, you know, the Ravens are giving up 21 fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks, and Blake Bortles, for what it's worth, has been producing, you know, fairly consistent mid to high tier fantasy quarterback. So if you're in need of a quarterback this week, I like Blake Bortles.
Vicente, as always, appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week. Our guy Vicente Fernandez of SportsManias.com. Take care, man.
Thanks so much. Stay tuned on your fantasy team with the SportsManias app this weekend.
Oh, it's fantastic. It gives you all the information you need. You just put the lineups in. It lets you know everything that's going on with everybody on your roster. Vicente, thanks again, my friend. We'll be back with plenty more right here on 720 WGN. Hey, hey, whoa, hey, hey. Welcome back to the beat here, 720 WGN. I believe it's the Dions who sing Run Around Sue.
Why? What's the relevance of Run Around Sue right now? I know Mike Jacobson would never do something without a direct correlation.
If I'm not mistaken, this is a song that's played over the montage in Bull Durham when they finally get their stuff together and start playing decent baseball. It is also in Rookie of the Year.
Little Big League.
Little Big Oh, that's Little right. Big it's Little League. Big League where they get their stuff together and start playing a bit. You're absolutely right.
It's a general baseball song.
It is.
And it's uplifting, and it makes me feel good inside, so that's why we played it.
So we've got a little bit of baseball to talk about here on November 14th here.
Not any real good feel-good stories quite yet. I know any moment.
Not so much, but soon. Free agency is open. The checkbooks of many, many teams are open. Some deals have gone down. I thought the Craig Kimbrell thing was fairly interesting. Joaquin Benoit gets moved around. Some relievers moving, too. Interesting the Cubs were not involved in some things. Both Dexter Fowler and Jeff Samardzija turned down their qualifying offers. Of course, you would have known that was going to happen had you listened to Carmen and I on the beat last week.
We were all over
told it. Told you exactly that.
There's no doubt.
So did, you know, everyone else who watched a single pitch of baseball last season.
Yeah, but
still...
We've never been wrong. I think that Cub fans are learning, Connor, that not only are the Cubs going to be opening up their wallets for some free agents, but you will be opening up your wallets, too, if you plan on going to Wrigley Field.
Yes, you will. There are a couple things here. We got to get into the ticket prices, but we have this little piece. Crane Kenny had been talking a little bit recently, and I know you're...
Yes, he had.
Yeah. And he mentioned... Yeah. So he mentioned some things about the Cubs TV network, and this ties into the ticket prices. We'll get you in just a second. And he mentioned some things about, you know, the Cubs radio network, or Cubs rather, I'm sorry, the television network that they'd like to invent here. And, you know, some people treated it as kind of some breaking stuff, and, you know, fine. Thing is that he told WGN Plus exactly this back in the middle of August. Here, take a listen real quick as to what Crane Kenny's talking about when it comes to how you are going to watch your Cubs come 2020.
We become free agents in 2020. Our agreement with Comcast ends in 2019, as does our agreements with our over-the-air partners. So, you know, 2020, if that's our first free agent year, you would think you'd see a deal in 17, 18 leading into it. There's a chance we get something done a little sooner, but we're very close, right? And we're obviously in conversations now with a group of parties that would love to carry us. Now, that's the plus side. The negative is there is some headwind in the sort of carriage market. And you saw the cable stocks get battered last week as they talked about millennials basically cutting the cord and not subscribing to the big bundle of programming that would include sports like ESPN. And ABC took a pounding last week as well as some others. And so the question is, you know, how desirable is the Cubs programming and how important is it to the cable bundle in Chicago? There's also the fact that we are partnered with Jerry and Rocky to put all four clubs on Comcast. And so the question is, really the only free agent sports in Chicago because the NFL has the national deals, you know, with CBS and Fox, is how important is it to have all four clubs in one place versus having the teams break apart and go do their own thing? So those are the questions that are being mulled and considered.
So that's Crane Kenny. And again, that was August 14th, Mike? Yeah, August 14th on WGN Plus, telling pretty much exactly what he'd been talking about here in the last week, too, as far as their free agent years coming up. Now, couple of things about this. Millennials are cutting the cord in a really big way. Baseball would love to get more millennials involved in watching their game. I mean, there are better numbers TV-wise. Let's not talk about the turnstiles quite yet, but let's talk about the actual TV viewing of this game. There are more eyes on it. The numbers for the playoffs were pretty good, better than I think a lot of people thought. Obviously, you had a team from New York involved. That's going to skew things one way or another. You want to get younger. You need younger eyes on that game. You have for a while now, and you're starting to do that. I use my brother as an example for this quite a bit. He's a big baseball fan, grew up a Cubs fan. He does not live in the market, does not own cable, in the Chicago market, rather, does not own cable, but subscribes to the MLB.TV thing. He watches every game that way whenever he feels like watching it, too, which is an interesting point. Crane's, you know, and the Cubs, too, and many other ball clubs are making plays for really the advanced media part later on down the line. Because in 5 years, I got to imagine that a lot of us are consuming broadcast television, whether it's sports or otherwise, in a very different way than even we're doing right now.
It's fascinating to me because at some point I always think, well, you know what, people are just not going to pay for that. You can't raise ticket prices indefinitely and we're always going to step up and pay whatever you slap on that ticket and to sit some, you know, not even in great seats, and it's a ton of dough. But to this point, we just keep paying.
Filled them up.
And so I'm fascinated myself as to what's going to happen in 2020 because there's, listen, a ton of diehard Cub fans in the city, if you told them they have to pay an extra $20 a month to get their Cubs on cable TV, they're going to do it. But there's also the other huge faction in this city that, hey, I got to pay another $5 for the Cubs? Nope, not going to do it. Even if it was a $3, they might not want that on their bill because I don't watch Cubs baseball. So I'm fascinated as to what's going to happen. I'm just curious. We can throw it out there, too. 312-981-7200. Are you going to pay more? If it was coming into this season, hey, right now, it's $5 extra on your cable bill.
Right.
Or you don't get the Cubs. Are you paying that freight?
I'd love to see, you know, because we talked about this quite a bit, not during this past Cubs season, but the one prior. You and I talked a lot about ticket pricing and, you know, as that pertains to eyes on the club, you know, eyes on the product. How many people are involved? How much is it costing you to not have people interested or at right. your ball games? And I kept on saying, you know, we kept on talking about that they must clearly think and have the numbers in front of them that once they get better at baseball, everybody comes back and then they get to move the number even farther out in front of you, right? Or even further out in front of your wallet, either way you want to move this. And indeed they have. I'd love to see how much they chopped into the margin with a playoff, you know, a couple of playoff games. Would have liked to have one, maybe two more at Wrigley Field, but that's what it was. You know, you chopped into some of that loss, I think, in what kind of significance? I'd love to know, you know, exactly how much of the red they got themselves, you know, out of. But now you're looking at increasing ticket prices even more next season on one playoff run. And I think Cubs fans, by and large, they're going to pay that money. They're going to put that money down.
Yeah, I'm also wondering any Cubs season ticket holder who's saying, you know what, because it came out today that Cubs are having a significant ticket price and ticket hike. And listen, the team has been charging the same for tickets the last three seasons, and their tickets have been incredibly overpriced as far as the secondary market. You could go...
Now, explain what you mean by that.
Well,
okay. You're not talking about value of the product there. You're talking about value of what that secondary market is, the demand is dictating.
I'm saying that if season ticket holders were trying to resell their seats on StubHub or any other secondary ticket place.
Or on Clark and Addison.
Or on Clark and Addison on the street, they were getting half, 40% on the dollar.
Sometimes even bigger knocks.
And sometimes that you couldn't give them away. I mean, that was the reality.
That's quite true.
And it's 100% true. Listen, I'm a season ticket holder myself, at least on a half the season, and I also know tons of people who are. And they couldn't give them away.
Two seasons ago in May, you know, because I walk off the red line to go home. I walk right past the ballpark. Two seasons ago in May, a guy literally off the was handing. He's like, here, just take these. I don't need them. I'm
right.
Like, no, I got to go home. I got to make dinner because I don't, you know, I'm good.
Yeah, and the scalpers had stacks of, you know, 300,
which, yeah.
You know, and $5. I mean, that's what was going on. And so now they have this great season last year, and congratulations. It was awesome. I enjoyed it. But instantly, you're just going to have a significant hike. And It's like you have no respect whatsoever to the people who have been paying inflated prices for 3+ years for a direct product, and you're just going to crush them. There's all this celebration about they're going to have this TV network and they're going to have the hotel and they're going to have all this cool stuff. The reality is, for the fan, yeah, they are. But it's going to cost you a lot more money to go see the Cubs and watch them.
Here's what I find interesting. And I've always found your perspective on this interesting because it's not mine. And yet every time we do this, you bring me a little bit closer to your side. No one's forcing anyone to pay for a ticket, right? I mean, first and foremost, that's a premise that everybody's got to grant here.
Of course.
And the market, you know, they're going to charge what they can get for each ticket in there.
Agreed.
Here's the thing. You look at what Yankee Stadium turned into, the first handful of years. They couldn't give those billion-dollar seats, scout seats away. You know, those giant leather recliners that are right behind Jorge Posada when Jorge Posada was still doing it there at New Yankee Stadium in the first handful of years. They couldn't fill those seats. They were priced to ridiculous heights.
$2,500 a ticket.
At what point do you reach that scenario with the Chicago Cubs? Can you? I think is a question that Cubs ticket offices probably are asking themselves because they might believe that you can't. You know, they might believe that because of everything involved with the Cubs and them putting a winning season together, not just this last one, but the next one too, whenever that happens to be, whether it's next year or the year after, that you can't price yourself out of a market that's dictated by people who want to see them win the first World Series in 110, 11, 12 years, however long it takes.
Right.
In a very real way, that's a driving market force.
It is. They're ruthless business people.
Yes, they are. I mean, don't get it twisted. They are.
I mean, that's what they are. But at some point, one of the quotes in the paper today in the Tribune from Colin Faulkner, the senior vice president of sales and partnerships. We've clearly seen an increase in demand, so that helped factor into an increase in our prices. Our goal is to remain competitive for the long term, provide value to our fans for a competitive baseball, but also value in their tickets. There is no value. The reality is, in season tickets right now, there is minimal. There's been negative value for 3+ years. Will there be value this year? If there is, it'll be the first time in a long time.
It will be. And you wonder how much value you're able to recoup because it's the first time in a long time.
Right.
This week, Chicago's Best answers the age-old question, which side is the best side? It's a North Side versus South Side food face-off. That's Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. We come back, we'll whip it around the college football score sheet. There are a couple of interesting ones. One in the Big Ten, one involving an undefeated ball club as well. We'll get you posted on those. At 5:30, the boys from Preps Plus will take over and get you posted on everything high school-wise that's happened in the great state of Illinois. That's coming up next here on 720 WGN.
All hands on deck tonight. I don't want them to wait down the road. Now is the time.
I wanted you to be in the locker room for that one, OB. You would have, if there was, I'm not saying they're not inspired, but if they weren't, you would have got them going right there.
Well, I'm going to tell you what the, be inspired. Cutler's making $16 million.
That's
inspiring.
Other
guys are making
you.
$9 million, yeah. $10 million. You're not inspired. I'd take a bench and break it over their head.
Yeah, that would inspire.
How's this for inspiring
or at least
you now,
knock
boys?
Them out, right?
You got a little lump on your noggin?
That man is the man. That's Ed Obradovich. And you can hear him on the Hamp, OB, and Cause show. Mark Carmen pilots the whole thing into oblivion. It's a wonderful. You have to listen to it after the Bears game. They'll be on at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, recapping whatever happens between the Bears and Rams. And I guarantee there will be more of that.
Inspired, I'll take a bench and break it over their head.
Bench and break it over their heads.
I mean, that is analysis you cannot get anywhere else. For real.
No, you honestly cannot. But that's tomorrow at 3 o'clock in the afternoon after the Bears take on the Rams. Some interesting things going on in college football right now. One score of interest in the Big Ten, and Mike Jacobson, our producer on the set of the glass, is going to check me if I'm wrong here because I'm doing the best I can to keep up. Indiana leads number 14 Michigan 26-24 right now. They're in the late stages of the third, I believe.
Yep, 26-14 late stages in the
24?
Third. Or 26-24, I'm sorry. Yeah, and they were down 24-23. They kicked a 24-yard field goal. So, yeah, right now Indiana could possibly upset Jim Harbaugh. And
what have we been talking about all year long with Indiana? They have an offense that can play with just about anybody in the league. A defense that cannot stop a damn thing.
Yeah, if they could just get that defense squared away. I mean, they lost 55-52 earlier in the year.
Just be okay.
55-52.
Watching Indiana is kind of like watching Mark Trestman in his first year with the Bears. That just don't suck. Just if the defense just wouldn't suck as immensely as they sucked that year, they would have been A-okay. Well, at least, you know, halfway decent.
Lost by a touchdown to Ohio State. 55-52 was to Rutgers. They lost by 8 to number 9 in the country, Iowa.
And that Ohio State game came down to the last play.
Yep.
There was pressure up the middle, and they going for it on fourth down, going for a touchdown, and couldn't convert.
Indiana, winless in the Big Ten, but always sniffing around W's, at least this year.
The Iowa State-Oklahoma State game was interesting, too. Number 8 Oklahoma State is 9-0 and undefeated. Iowa State has now retaken a 10-point lead. They led as much as, I believe it was 24-3 in that ballgame, or 24-7 in that ballgame. Oklahoma State's put one on the board in each quarter and will need at least two more scores to keep their undefeated record. And like you mentioned, Carm, they're ranked 8 and undefeated. they lose one, and what are you looking at there in your college football playoff ranking? They're going to drop quite a bit.
There's going to be a whole lot of debate, as there always is, as to who deserves to be in what bowl, but it always comes down to, as we were just talking about with the Cubs ticket prices, the almighty dollar.
Can you travel your team?
Will you be there? How many people are going to show up? Have you been in this state too many years in a row, a la Wisconsin and Florida, right? You guys have been down, and so they want
apparently, Wisconsin just lives in Orlando. That's just what she's do.
So it's time for perhaps the Badgers to go elsewhere.
That's your spin around college football. We get you posted on everything that's going on with high school football here in the surrounding area with the boys from Preps Plus. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes right here on 720 WGN.